Jy luister na RSG Geldsaake met Money Web Potgoeie met gasheer Ryk van die Kerk. Jy luister na RSG Geldsaake met Ryk van die Kerk, jou betroubare bron vir sake en beleggingsinsigte.
Goeienaand en hartlik welkom by RSG Geldsaake. Gister was Vryheidsdag. En dit beteken vandag is 'n vakansiedag en op vakansiedag pas ons die programstruktuur so 'n bietjie aan. Luisteraars sal dalk verbaas wees, maar ek doen elke jaar so wat 1500 onderhoude met van die invloedrykste sakelui, entrepreneurs, meningsvormers, uitvoerende hoofde, regeringsamptenare, politici, ekonome en ontleders in die land en daar is ook baie van hulle wat met ons vanuit die buiteland gesels. Nou al hierdie onderhoude is natuurlik as potgoeie beskikbaar, maar ek kry dikwels versoeke van luisteraars om sekere van hulle weer uit te saai. Daarom gaan ek vanavond drie van my onlangse onderhoude herhaal. Die eerste insetsel sluit twee onderhoude in wat ek einde januari gevoer het met Kali Kriel van AfriForum en die bekende joernalis Leanne Mannas. Nou ons het gesels oor daardie bedrieglike R4700 advertensies op sosiale media waarin hierdie individue se identiteite misbruik word om beleggings te bemark wat glo meer as R300.000 per maand op hierdie R4700 beleggings kan oplewer. Is totaal en al vals en ek gaan met hulle gesels oor die impak wat hierdie bedrog op hulle persoonlike lewens het en gehad het. Daarna gaan ons luister na 'n gesprek wat ek vroeg in Desember met Chris Skutte gevoer het. Hy was toe nog die uitvoerende hoof van Astral Foods. Ons het teruggekyk na die geskiedenis van Astral, hoe dit ontstaan het, hoe die maatskappy gegroei het en wat die maatskappy se belangrikste mylpale in sy geskiedenis was. En ons gesels ook oor hoe hierdie hoendermaatskappy die naam Astral gekry het en wat die verband tussen die twee is. En laastens, weens 'n groot aantal versoeke, speel ons weer my onderhoud met Wayne McCurry. Nou, hy is die bekende beleggingskenner wat verlede jaar afgetree het, maar steeds beskou word as 'n legende, nie net in die beleggingsbedryf nie, maar ook onder motorliefhebbers, veral die wat van Jaguars hou. En ons gesels met hom oor sy loopbaan en sy liefde vir hierdie motors. Bly ingeskakel.
Ek is Henko met 'n C en ek vertrou al my familie se aftree en beleggingsgeld toe aan Kreur Internasionaal, 'n ervare span professionele beleggers met 'n passie vir dienslewering in Afrikaans. Ek het die gemoedsrus dat Kreur Internasionaal my familie se geld bestuur, net soos wat hulle hul eie families se geld bestuur. Kontak hulle nou by kreurinternasionaal.co.za of skakel hulle by 011-726-7700. Besoek ook kreurinternasionaal.co.za en registreer vir een van hulle opkomende webinare en sakeontbyte. Kreur Internasionaal is jou reisgenoot op die pad na gemoedsrus en finansiële groei.
Ons begin vanavond met 'n heruitsending van 'n onderhoud wat ek op 31 Januarie gevoer het met Kali Kriel van AfriForum en die joernalis Leanne Mannas oor die misbruik van hulle name in vals en bedrieglike beleggingsadvertensies.
Vir die belangrikste sake nuus, skakel in op RSG Geldsaake.
Ek ondersoek al 'n geruime tyd die talle vals en bedrieglike advertensies wat oral op sosiale media versprei word. Hierdie advertensies gebruik die name en beelde van bekende mense om spesiale kunsmatige intelligensie beleggingsplatforms te bemark wat kwansuis reuse winste beloof. Byvoorbeeld, as jy eenmalig R4700 belê, dan kan jy tot R500.000 per maand ontvang vir die res van jou lewe. Nou, dit is natuurlik absoluut bedrieglik en vals. Nou, die lys van bekende name wat hierby ingesleep word is lank. Dit sluit in mense soos die miljardêers Johan Rupert, Elon Musk, Nikki Oppenheimer en Patrice Motsepe, maar meer onlangs is Afrikaanse figure soos Kali Kriel van AfriForum, Steve Hofmeyer, Bok van Blerk, Gerry Fourie van Capitec en ook ons Springbokheld Pieter Steef de Tooi geteken. Dan die identiteite van joernaliste soos Leanne Mannas en Moneyweb se eie Henko Kreur is ook gesteel om hierdie platforms te bemark. Nou die patroon van hierdie advertensies verskil van mekaar, maar die kernboodskap bly dieselfde. Hulle beweer dat 'n slim beleggingsplatform met behulp van kunsmatige intelligensie op wêreldmarkte outomaties kan verhandel en dan beleggers ongelooflike opbrengste besorg. In sommige gevalle is daar selfs gemanipuleerde video's waarin joernaliste soos Leanne Manas hierdie produkte aanbeveel. Nou ek het sedert Februarie verlede jaar bykans 15 keer doelbewus op hierdie advertensies geregistreer. In bykans elke geval is ek kort daarna deur 'n verteenwoordiger van een van twee maatskappye gekontak. Die maatskappye is Banksho en Afrimarkets. Ek het hulle al verskeie kere genader om te verduidelik hoekom hulle agente mense bel wat op hierdie FOP advertensies registreer, maar hulle het ontken dat hulle enige iets met hierdie advertensies te doen het. En hulle het gesê hulle is die slagoffer van 'n kuberaanval waar 'n derde party sonder hulle medewete die inligting van hierdie mense wat op hierdie vals advertensies registreer in hulle stelsels invoeg. Hulle weet nie waar dit vandaan kom nie. Maar dan is dit baie interessant, want as Afrimarkets se agente nou mense gebel het wat op hierdie vals advertensies geregistreer het, ontken die agente bloot dat hulle enigiets met die advertensies te doen het, maar dan gaan hulle voort met 'n poging om hierdie mense as kliënte te werf. Nou die gedragsowerheid van die finansiële sektor of die FSCA het verlede jaar Banksho se lisensie voorlopig teruggetrek, maar kort daarna het Afrimarkets verskyn en gaan voort met presies dieselfde modus operandi. Nou kortliks, die mense word gewerf om deur verskilkontrakte of CFD's in wêreldmarkte en bateklasse te belê. Nou CFD's is hoogs riskante instrumente waar mense baie geld baie vinnig kan verloor. Selfs ervare verhandelaars verloor meer as wat hulle wen en dit is ook nie verbasend nie dat die verhandeling van CFD's heeltemal in Amerika en Hong Kong verbied word. Nou nadat die platform nou mense as kliënte gewerf het, sommige met absoluut geen verhandelingservaring nie en mense wat op hulle pensioengeld leef, dan maak hulle gewoonlik aan die begin 'n bietjie geld en dan word hulle deur suksesbestuurders van Afrimarkets aangemoedig om meer geld te deponeer. Nou later begin hulle dan hierdie geld verloor en dan plaas hierdie suksesbestuurders geweldige druk op hulle om nog geld te deponeer. En in sommige gevalle het mense al hulle spaar en aftreegeld verloor. Nou die omvang van die verliese is verstommend. Meer as 350 het my reeds gekontak en gesê dat hulle gesamentlik so wat 220 miljoen rand deur Banksho verloor het. Afrimarkets is nog nie so lank aan die gang nie, maar 18 mense het my alreeds laat weet dat hulle het so wat 8 miljoen deur hierdie platform verloor. Een individu meer as 6 miljoen rand. Ek het vir Afrimarkets genooi om aan vanaand se program deel te neem en hulle kant van die storie te stel, maar hulle het hierdie geleentheid van die hand gewys. Ek gaan egter gesels met Leanne Manas, een van die joernaliste wie se identiteit gesteel is om hierdie swendelary te bemark. Sy is veral prominent in hierdie gemanipuleerde video's en dan gaan ek ook gesels met Callie Kriel van Afriforum wat ook steeds deurloop. Op die lyn nou, Leanne Manas. Leanne, thank you so much for your time tonight. You were one of the first prominent individuals to be featured in these fake ads. The first one I saw was a deepfake video where you interviewed Johan Rupert and he made bold promises. But when did you become aware that your identity have been stolen to market these fake AI bots?
Rick, thank you very, very much for focusing in on this. And thanks so much for the invitation to talk about this, because, you know, the more I talk about it, I feel like I just can't get this message out alone. You know, at one point I was, you know, dedicating my time and life to try and educate people about the dangers of all of this. But, you know, I can't win on my own. But this has been going on for a while. And it's actually a very long story, because it was something that started, and I'm going to summarize it for you because I know time's not on our side. But, you know, it all started off initially, and I would say this started about almost 2.5 years ago, where they stole my identity. And I don't know who, how or what, but they stole it beginning to sell slimming tablets. And it started with me having invented this miraculous drug that you literally would chew at night and wake up having lost X amount of kilos in the morning. Then I started getting inundated with emails and phone calls and inboxes and every social media wanting to buy this miracle drug. And I'm like, I didn't even know what this was. And then I try to put it out there and say, it's not me. I don't know what's going on, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, this carried on going. And then eventually I went to overseas for a while, just on holiday, nothing dramatic. But obviously the guys watch and they see what's going on. And then suddenly, while I was overseas, there was all this fake news coming out that I had found some amazing loophole in the Reserve Bank that allowed people to make so much money and that I had been arrested. And that's why I wasn't on air anymore. Meantime, I was on holiday and I didn't know what was going on. And then this just spread and there were AI manipulated pictures of me being arrested all over the place, appearing in court. And people were believing this because I wasn't on air. So they were thinking this is true. And then, of course, it's now, even if you see some of these adverts now, it's still got the same narrative that I know the truth and I have uncovered something that can make so much money and I'm speaking out about it and it's only 4,700 Rand. And I do recognize the two names. And then, of course, it's just steamrolled ever since then. And it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And the pictures turned into AI videos. And you're quite right. I mean, they all seem to be around, you know, very prominent figures from the president to Elon Musk to me interviewing whoever and my face there and selling it. And I get hundreds of emails and I've been sort of, you know, it's really done a lot of damage to me emotionally and personally because I just can't believe that people are falling for this and investing millions because apparently that's what we're talking about, that just on my name alone, people have thought that they're getting money and going to get these returns and they've lost millions. And that was a Mail and Guardian investigation that they also did into this and that's what they were uncovering. So, you know, that's the very, very short version of an extremely long and terrible story.
Yeah, I must imagine the personal impact must be immense because it's not only your name that is being misused, but the people trust you and then they act because you are promoting this product. So can you maybe describe just the personal impact these ads have had on you?
There's many impacts to it because, as you say, Rick, I mean, my whole career, all I've ever done is work in the most, you know, trustworthy way. And that's kind of, that's all I have is my reputation. And that is very, very important to me. And the last thing in the world I want to do is be the face of the biggest scam that is out there at the moment. And it is one of the biggest scams. And I know that I probably was one of the very first faces that they used. And it just goes, it gets bigger and bigger. And then I have seen so many more. And your list, you know, is enlightening to me because I didn't even realize it was that big because I'm so consumed by how much of me is out there that I didn't even know that it was so many others. But, you know, it has. I've seen my own funeral on social media, to be honest with you. And I've had people contacting me saying, you know, are you okay? My cousin got hold of me 2 days ago and sent a picture of me lying in a hospital bed and saying, you know, Leanne wants to tell you the truth before she dies. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And it's about this investment. Yeah. And, you know, literally, I mean, you know, it's been to the point of my mother has, you know, whatever pictures they could find of my mom, they made a video of it and that my mom had died, my husband's died, I've died. Thank goodness I keep my private life with my children very private so that they're not out there. But, you know, it's had massive repercussions. I mean, people come up to you and the emails that I get saying, you know, we trusted you and we've invested and we don't know what's going on. We've not heard. And I have nothing to do with it. I don't even know what it is. And that's very sad.
Have you tried to find out who are behind those ads?
I have certainly tried to phone those numbers and they all sort of don't respond. They change all the time because that's what they do. I think I've gathered that that's kind of the modus operandi. They make a video call because people, I mean, a lot of people come up to me and say, listen, people that I know, the number, this is who they are. They do a video call, but they put a picture of me up in front of it and then say, okay, are you happy? Now will you transfer the money? You know, it's that kind of, and it's so ridiculous that it's almost laughable, but people fall for it. And this is where my worry comes in, is that as much as I try and educate and speak and ask for help in terms of investigations and all of these kind of things into it, nobody can actually help because this thing is so intricate. And as far as I gather, this is a global scheme that it doesn't just work. I mean, I've read many articles about it, and they target very trusted individuals in different countries around the world. And this is something that happens all over the place. So you don't even know where they're operating out of. Yes, it's this Bankso and another name that always tends to come up, and even more. I mean, I've never heard names like this, but, you know, I'm inundated with them, the requests and all of these kind of things.
Yeah.
But I have tried, on another side note, in terms of what I try to do to stop this. And one of the things that I've tried on numerous occasions is to report this to social media, because for me, this is where it's being spread. On Facebook, on Instagram, on TikTok alone, I think there must be about 8,000 to 10,000 accounts in my name. And on YouTube, using SABC logos, using news bulletins, and then AI manipulating them, the more you report them, the more these social media giants refuse to do anything about it, saying that they can't do anything, there's nothing illegal happening, and I am more than welcome to take it further at my own cost in a court of law. It doesn't make sense. Whereas yeah. I am reporting someone who is actually stealing my identity and pretending that I am this person, which I'm not. And I'm the person reporting it, and I'll do nothing about it.
Leanne, baie dankie vir jou tyd. Ek moet sê, ek het ook al by Facebook navraag ingesit, media navraag. Dit word nie eers beantwoord nie, en dit neem ook nie toe, soos jy gesê het. Maar ons gaan in die story verseker fyn dophou en in jou betrokkenheid. Maar nog 'n slagoffer, Callie Kriel van AfriForum. Callie, welkom by die program. Vertel ons jou story. Wanneer het jy bewus geword en wat is die impak daarvan op jou en AfriForum?
Nee, baie dankie, Ryk. Ek dink dit is baie erger as dat ek 'n slagoffer is. Ek dink die ergste slagoffers is die mense wat val vir hierdie storie en dan nou hulle geld daar belê en dan verloor. En die tragedie hiervan is dat die terugvoer wat ek het, baie van die mense wat hiervoor val, is juis mense wat dit nie kan bekostig nie. Mense wat desperaat is en voel hulle kort nou 'n ekstra geldjie, en dan doen hulle dit. Ek het 'n ou tannie wat 'n weduwee is, hy't Zeerust, wat ek mee kontak gehad het, wat regtig finansiële probleme het, en sy het dit toe nou gedoen en haar geld verloor. Die ander tragedie is natuurlik dat dit aanhou, en dit wat my bekommer daarvan is, dit beteken dit werk, want hulle sal mos nou nie aanhou hiermee as dit nie werk nie. Nou, ek het die eerste keer bewus geraak hiervan gedurende April verlede jaar. Toe was daar 'n advertensie op Facebook dat ek en Steve Hofmeyer kon sês nou hierdie beleggingsplatform begin het teen plaasmoorde. Nou wat hulle doen is hulle speel in op 'n baie emosionele onderwerp en dan vang hulle mense daarmee. Nou ek het destyds het ek nou dadelik gaan registreer sommer met my eie naam om te kyk wat gebeur en dit is eintlik die blaatantheid. Jou naam word gebruik om te bemark, jy registreer met jou eie naam en dan bel hulle jou en dit was toe uiteindelik Bankso. Nou ek vir die agens gesê, luister, jy is bezig met korrupsie. Naderhand het ek gesê, ek wil met sy lynbestuurder praat. Die het ek mee gepraat, maar hulle ontken dit. Jy kan nie dink dat mense met so koelbloedig leens kan verkondig nie. Naderhand het ek toe met die bestuurder, Manuel de Andrade, gepraat en hy het met 'n baie sappige storie gekom dat hulle weet regtig nie hiervan nie. Sy argument was dat iemand hulle wil diskrediteer en dan misbruik hulle nou hiervoor. Maar die ergste van alles is, hulle net aanhou, ek dink jy het dit ook net nou genoem, jy sê vir hulle dit is korrupsie, maar dan probeer hulle nog steeds aan jou verkoop. Nou na hierdie incident, nadat ek myself met die Manuel de Andrade gepraat het, het dit opgehou. Maar toe dit nou weer kop uitgesteek, ek het weer geregistreer. Hierdie keer het ek by AfriMarkets uitgekom en jy sal my nie glo nie. Dieselfde bestuurder is daar, Manuel de Andrade. Dieselfde eienaar is van die twee maatskappye. Die ontkennings is nog dieselfde. Nou ek het vandag weer met meneer Andrade gepraat, maar ek moet nou bieg het maar sarkasties. Ek sê dit is nou baie toevallig, nê, dat ons nou hierdie situasie het dat twee verskillende maatskappye hierdie doen en jy's elke keer betrokke. Nou goed, behalwe, ek sê toe vir homself, al is jy reg dat jy nie weet nie. In terme van die Poppy wetgewing, moet jy kan aandui waar jy my data kry. En as jy nie weet wie my data vir jou deurgestuur het nie, dan is jy in elk geval besig met 'n misdrijf. Ek het toe nou vandag ook met advokaat Gerriel en sy span gepraat, dat hulle klag by die Owerheid vir Finansiële Sektor Gedrag indien, maar dat hulle ook kyk na kriminele oortreding. Maar ook wat Leanne gesê het, jy weet, ons het nou hierdie goed al by Facebook by hulle gekla. Ons personeel het ek aangemoedig as hulle so iets doen om dit te doen. En elke keer kom die antwoord terug, so half geautomatiseerde antwoord. Nee, hierdie advertensie oortree nie hulle standaarde nie. So ons is nou al op die punt waar ons regstappe teen Facebook wil neem. En selfs, jy weet, al moet mens nou teen Facebook kriminele klagte in Suid-Afrika indien, want hulle is eenvoudig aandadig. Hierdie goed spring op, behalwe vir Banksy en Afrimarkets, is daar ook ander. En ons het een van daai mense kon ten minste met hom gepraat kry, maar toe sit in Nigeria. En nou Barry Buitman by Gerinel se kantoor wat dit ondersoek het, die oproep opgeneem waar hy met die persoon praat. En die persoon hou toe vol, hy is Kalikriel, maar hy praat met 'n Nigeriese aksent, dis Carly, of ek kan nou nie dit sien nie. Nou, dit kon staaks gewees het, maar nou val mense hiervoor. En, ja. En dit is wat bly is oor hierdie gesprek, dat mense die boodskap uitsier. Maar Rula Media het hulle artikel gedoen, Rapport het 'n artikel gedoen, ons waarsku mense op ons sosiale media, maar dit is baie moeilik om hierdie boodskap by almal uit te kry.
Ja, kyk, baie mense sê, mense kan mis nou duidelik sien, dit is fopnuus. Want op geen manier op aarde kan R4,700 vir jou 500,000 plus per maand gee nie. Maar hier is baie mense uitgevang. Ek het genofstukke gesien, het Banksy beweer, hulle het omtrent 7,000, net so oor die 7,000 actieve kliënte. Maar in 'n transkripsie in hofstukke het een van die ander senior mense van Banksy gesê, hulle het op 'n stadium 90,000 kliënte gehad. Nou, ek weet nie of dit 'n tikfout is nie, maar dit was 'n transkripsie van 'n gesprek, maar die besigheid het meer as 200 mense in die Kaap, en as dit natuurlik nou van hierdie vals advertensies kom, kan dit baie groot wees. Die omvang daarvan, dink ek, is baie groter as wat mense dink.
Nee, ek dink ongelukkig is dit so. En die aanduiding vir my, al ek kyk mens nie na die syfers nie, is net die feit dat hulle aanhou daarmee, beteken hier is groot geld te maak, want ons weet mens nou, as jy besigheidsinisiatief het en dit sukkel, dan gaan jy net nie daarmee aan nie. So, maar ek dink is juist, wat ek sê, ongelukkig mense wat dit werklik nie kan bekostig nie, en dan is hulle in 'n desperate posisie, en dan is hierdie mense gewetenloos om juist op daardie mense toe te slaan.
Ons laat daarmee los. Callie, baie, baie dankie vir jou tyd. Soos ek ook vroeër gesê het, ons sal die storie fyn dophou, en asseblief alle luisteraars, bly weg van hierdie advertensies. Dit is te goed om waar te wees. Dit is eintlik baie, baie grootste fout, meer fout van goed. Dit is absoluut net nonsens. Bly weg daarvan. Dit is net daar om mense van hulle geld te vervreem. Maar ek wil net weer sê, ek het vir Afrimarkets gevra om in vanaand se program deel te neem, maar hulle het hierdie geleentheid van die hand gewys. Ek wil ook net vir almal wat geld verloor het deur Banksy of Afrimarkets, stuur vir my 'n e-pos na ryk@moneyweb.co.za en vertel my net kortliks jou storie, dat ons dan net op 'n manier kan boekhou van presies wat hier gebeur. Dit was dan 'n heruitsending van my gesprek met Kalikriel en Leanne Mannas op 31 Januarie oor die vals R4,700 beleggingsadvertensies op sosiale media. Ek het op 2 Desember verlede jaar met Chris Skutte gesels. Hy was toe nog die uitvoerende hoof van Astral Foods, en ons het oor die geskiedenis van die maatskappy gesels.
RSG Geldsaake met Moneyweb, elke week saam tussen 6 en 7.
Ons gesels elke tweede maandag oor die geskiedenis van 'n bekende Suid-Afrikaanse maatskappy, want baie mense is kliënte van hierdie besighede, maar ken nie altyd die geskiedenis van hierdie maatskappy nie, weet ook nie hoe oud hulle is nie, en natuurlik, daar is baie koöperatiewe winde wat groot maatskappye vorm so oor die dekades heen. Nou, ons gaan vanaand gesels oor Astral Foods. Nou, dit is die grootste hoenderprodusent in die land, en as jy al hoender gekoop het by Shoprite, Pick n Pay, Boxer en dies meer, dan het jy al van hulle produkte gekoop. Van hulle bekende handelsname is Goldie Chicken, County Fair, Festive en Mountain Valley. En as jy hou van wegneem etes en jy het al by Kentucky, Nando's en Hungry Lion hoender gekoop, dan het jy ook al van Astral se hoenders geniet. Chris Kitte is op die lyn, hy is die uitvoerende hoof. Chris, baie welkom by die program. Ek het vandag self probeer navorsing doen oor die geskiedenis. Ek kon nie veel kry nie, so vertel vir ons die storie. Waar het Astral begin?
Dis 'n bietjie van 'n interessante geskiedenis. Nou, Astral is gelys in 2001 in April maand, en dit het gekom as gevolg van 'n klomp primêre landboumaatskappye wat in die Tiger Oats en later Tiger Brands stal was. En ek dink hulle siening was dat dit pas nie hulle besigheidsmodel nie, dis te wisselvallig, jy moet na die reën en die weer kyk, en hulle hou van produkte wat stabiele marges het. So het hulle besluit in die 2000s om van hierdie landboumaatskappye te verkoop, en dit was meestal rondom hoenderproduksie, genetika en veevoere. So Astral as 'n gelyste eenheid is in 2001 gelys. Ons sê rofweg, ons is nou 24 jaar oud. Maar dis nie 'n volle storie nie. As jy gaan kyk na die handelsmerke en die wisselwerking in hierdie integrasie, ons praat van 'n ten volle geïntegreerde pluimveeproduksiemaatskappy. So ons maak ook ons eie voer. Nou as jy net vir 'n oomblik gaan stilstaan, meadowvoere wat deel van die pakket in die ontbondeling na Astral toe gekom het, meadowvoere is nou al reeds 82 jaar oud. Nou hy het net so ryke geskiedenis. Hier voor my lê 'n formulasie wat gedoen is vir koeie in 1936. Toe was daar 5 bestanddele in die rantsoen. Ek het gou laat my voedingskundiges kyk, op die oomblik sit ons in so gebalanseerde rantsoen amper 70 bestanddele. So dis ook 'n idee hoe het voer ontwikkel het. So alhoewel Astral jonk is, is die handelsmerke in hom baie ouer en baie gesog. Meadow is een van die meeste van ons pluimveehandelsmerke, Festive, County Fair en sovoorts, soos wat jy genoem het, Goldie, is tussen 60 en 65 jaar oud. So buite die gelyste naam Astral, en somtyds wonder hy of dit gepas is, is die handelsmerke wat 'n baie ryk en 'n baie goeie geskiedenis. Byvoorbeeld Goldie is nou al vir jare geklassifiseer en genomineer as die nommer 1 handelsmerk in pluimvee in Suider-Afrika. So daar's 'n baie ander geskiedenis as wat mens net op die oog af lees as jy na Astral sou kyk.
Ja, dit is 'n interessante geskiedenis, en ek dink by baie maatskappye is daar van die handelsmerke is meer bekend as die naam van die maatskappy, soos in Astral se geval. Maar die naam Astral, ek het Latijn gehad op skool, en natuurlik verwys Astral, as ek nou reg onthou, na die hemelruim en sterre en dis meer. So hoe het julle nou hoenders by die sterre uitgebring toe julle die naam gekies het?
Dis nou maar wanneer 'n koöperatiewe aksie is, dan gaan kyk hulle waar daar iewers te houer maatskappy is met 'n naam wat klaar geregistreer is. So dit onder die Astral naam gekom, geen verwysing na hoender toe nie.
Was dit 'n rakmaatskappy?
Ja, die rakmaatskappy se naam is gebruik. So, ons debatteer nog steeds of dit nie dalk tyd is nie, want daar's geen verwysing na pluimvee of landbou toe nie. So ons sit nog steeds met die gedagte om dalk in die nabye toekoms een van ons ander sterk handelsmerke wat ook 50 jaar is, Early Bird, as 'n oorkoepelende naam te gebruik eerder as Astral.
Dis 'n baie interessante feit daardie. Maar as jy nou so terugkyk, jy was al van 2005 af daar, sedert 2009 die uitvoerende hoof. So jy het 'n absolute deurslaggewende rol gespeel om Astral te vorm in wat dit vandag is. As jy nou terugkyk na die begin, die sakeplan wat eers voorgelê is, is wat vandag gevestig is, wat voorsien is 24 jaar gelede.
Weereens met die ontbondeling was daar geen idee van 'n geïntegreerde pluimveemaatskappy wat belyn is by al die eenhede. Ons het 26 besigheidseenhede. Ek dink wat in my tyd gebeur het was net die herbelyning van die goed. Hierdie maatskappye was baie goed bestuur en funksioneel. Dit was net nie belyn met mekaar nie. So ek dink my voorgangers het uitstekende handelsmerke en besighede bestuur. Ek was maar net gelukkig om saam met 'n sterk span hierdie goed beter te kan belyn om alles optimaal te funksioneer, want as ons na pluimvee kyk, dis 'n baie hoë volume, lae marge besigheid, en as jy nie alles in jou waardeketting of produksieketting presies uitvoer nie, dan by die goed. En ons praat altyd, ons is 'n sente maatskappy, nie 'n rande maatskappy nie. So as ons koste bepalings doen, dan kyk ons na tot 2 desimale punte van 'n sent as gevolg van die hoë volumes. Net om 'n voorbeeld te noem, ons praat van yield. Dis nou as jy hoenderslag, hoeveel kilogram verkoop jy op die einde van die dag van die karkas. Net 'n 1% verandering daar op ons winslyn is 170 miljoen rand. So daar is net een voorbeeld. En natuurlik, uit die aard van die saak, is die volume so groot. Ons verkoop amper 300 miljoen hoenders per jaar. Enige gegewe oomblik van die dag het ons amper 40 miljoen hoenders wat ons nou moet omsien en bestuur.
Ja, dis eintlik 'n ongelooflike storie. Dis asof julle 'n pizza gebou het met 'n klomp bestanddele wat julle maar net opgegooi het en gehoop het dit gaan lekker smaak en 24 jaar later is dit baie duidelik dat julle samevoeging van al die maatskappye werk. Natuurlik het dit nie van self gebeur en dit het met leierskap gebeur. Die kultuur binne die maatskappy, dis nie altyd maklik om 'n kultuur te vestig in 'n kort tydperk nie. Gewoonlik neem dit dekades en dekades. So, hoe sal jy die kultuur binne Astral beskryf?
Dis 'n moeilike een. Ons het al professionele mense ingekry om bietjie navorsing te doen en vir my te kom sê wat is ons kultuur en dan kom hulle terug en sê jong, dis maar net 'n span mense wat nie opgee nie, wat elke dag probeer verbeter. Ons probeer nie om rasseskrede te verbeter, maar as jy elke dag moet breekdele van 'n persentasie probeer verbeter, dan op die einde van die dag, dan maak hierdie groot, groot verskille. En ek dink ons pas afgelope finansiële periode dit bewys hoe ons 'n 2 biljoen rand agterstand kon inhaal in 11 maande en terugbetaal. En dit is suiwer met die regte span en die regte fokus op kritieke punte van die besigheid.
En dan in julle kantien, eet julle elke dag hoender daar?
Wel, dit is een van die toetse. As jy elke dag hoender eet en jy wil nog die werk, dan kan jy aanbly. So, jy weet, hoender is die mees gewildste. Ons verbruik in die land was al so hoog soos 40 kilogram per capita verbruik per persoon. Dis amper 'n hoender per persoon per week in Suid-Afrika. So, dit is 'n mooi syfer. En natuurlik wil jy daai per capita verbruik verhoog. Jy wil dit stimuleer. Hoe doen jy dit? Dis die beskikbaarheid en die waardeproposisie. So dit bly 'n fokuspunt by ons.
Chris, baie baie dankie vir jou tyd vanaand. Dit was Chris Skutte, die uitvoerende hoof van Astral Foods.
Dit was dan 'n heruitsending van my onderhoud met Chris Skutte van Astral Foods, wat oorspronklik verlede jaar op 2 Desember uitgesaai is.
Ek dink dit is tyd vir 'n avontuur. Ons kan vir die kleinkinders gaan kuier en sommer na die woonstel in Londen gaan kyk terwyl ons daar is. Of ons kan hulle in Dubai ontmoet en op pad daarheen na eiendom kyk.
Hoekom net in een plek bly as jy 'n wêreldburger kan wees? As jy daaraan dink, dink ons ook daaraan. Gesels met Nedbank Private Wealth. Ons kan jou help om al jou internasionale banksaake, lenings en beleggings op een platform te bestuur. See money differently. Nedbank Private Wealth. Ons is gelisensieerde FDV en geregistreerde kredietverskaffer. Besenfees geld.
Nou gaan ons luister na 'n heruitsending van my gesprek met die beleggingskenner Wayne McCurry. Die onderhoud is oorspronklik op 7 November gevoer.
RSG Geldsaake met Moneyweb, jou betroubare bron vir sakke en beleggingsinsigte.
Dis donderdag en ek gesels weer met 'n bekende sakepersoon en ons gesels oor hulle loopbane en ook die bedrywe waarin hulle werk en in vandag se geval waar hulle gewerk het, want my gas is Wayne McCurry. Hy is 'n legende in die batebestuursbedryf en hy het verlede week aan die einde van Oktober het hy afgetree en dit is nadat hy vir bykans 4 dekades in die beleggingsbedryf gewerk het en ek dink ook hy se huishoudelike naam want hy is 'n gereelde kommentator op menige finansiële en beleggingsplatforms. Wayne, thank you so much for your time today. You retired last week. I think it's exactly a week today. Are you bored yet? Are you ready to jump back in?
No, definitely not yet. First of all, thank you for those very kind words in your introduction. Now, look, I've got lots of things to keep me busy, and namely motor cars. So I've restored some old classic cars for my own use, for all my own cars. And I've got a lot of cars and, quite frankly, not enough time in the week to work on them. So, yeah, and I'm certainly going to keep myself busy.
Let's talk about your collection of cars. You say you have a lot of cars. I believe you have around 40, of which 38 are Jaguars or Jags, which is quite a substantial collection. Tell us where this interest came from.
I've always liked old sports cars. So, I mean, this has been going on my whole life, from the moment I almost got my license. I suppose about 20 years ago, I had a whole lot of different makes of sports cars, and I got a little bit sick of ordering spares from different people and joining different clubs and having to buy different books for all the different cars. And I just happened to have more Jaguars than other cars, so I decided I was just concentrate on Jaguars. It's just, I like working with my hands because it's complete contrast to what I did before I retired. So I enjoy actually working on the cars. I mean, I don't particularly enjoy driving them because these are all 40-year-old plus motor cars, so they're not exactly geared for modern busy street use. So there's no air conditioning, there's no power steering, the brakes aren't as good as modern brakes, so I don't actually drive the cars much at all. And also, I haven't got a museum. You know, I don't like inviting people around to come and say, look at my cars. So I work on my cars. I employ 5 mechanics and spray painters and auto electricians, etc. And we just work on my cars during the day. So, yeah, it's fun. I enjoy it.
So do you buy run-down cars that need restoring? And then are you putting your head underneath the bonnet and fix them? And do you sell them?
I do sell now and again, but I mainly just keep them. Look, when I say 40 cars, understand maybe 6 or 7 of them are drivable. All the rest are either in the process of being restored or they've got to start restoration. So it looks like a bit of a scrapyard some days, yeah? But yes, essentially I get the cars from 2 sources. People very similar to me, when they retire, they want a hobby. So they decide, I'm going to restore a motor car at home in my garage. And then 15 years later, the wife says to them, either the car goes or you go. Because what I've learned is you actually cannot do it by yourself in your garage at home without people to help you, without knowledge, without a spares base, without all the right equipment. It is just actually an impossible task. So lots of guys start these hobbies, and then for one single person at home in, you know, using half of your double garage, it is actually an impossible job. So I pick up probably the majority of my cars like that. And then the second source is a lot of chaps have a car that they bought to strip for spares, to fix another car, and then that half-stripped car sits in their garage or in their backyard forever. And I'm in a fortunate position in that because I've been doing this for quite a while now, and I've bought spares and things from all over the place. I have a very extensive new and secondhand spares stock. I can buy a car that's been half-stripped, but I can find the spares where I've got the spares to actually complete the car. So I very seldom buy running motor vehicles.
So I guess you don't have 40 cars in your garage. You need to store it somewhere else. But this must be an insanely expensive hobby.
Yes, it is. It does absorb a fair amount of cash flow, but it doesn't actually cost me anything because the cars are worth way more when they're finished than what I put into them. So I actually make money on it, even though I don't, as we spoke about earlier on, make cash flow out of it because I don't sell the cars all that often. It's actually a hobby that doesn't cost me money.
Let's move back to Wayne, the professional investor. But you have an interesting story because you started off as an accounting clerk, I think in Kimberley, if I remember correctly. Just tell us exactly your journey from being a schoolboy into becoming a professional investor.
You're correct. I grew up in Kimberley. My dad worked for De Beers his whole life. And when I went to the army for the 2-year call-up, my dad had organized me a job in the mines in Kimberley when I finished the army, a job called a mine onsetter. It's a person who drives the lift up and down the shaft. But then during my army career on one weekend, on the weekend pass in Kimberley, I happened to meet a girl and she came from Maritzburg. So I actually said during my army career that I'd like to move to Maritzburg and not go back to Kimberley. And her dad said, I'll organize a job for you. So I said, great, that's fantastic. And he organized me a job with a firm of chartered accountants. I didn't know a chartered accountant, but I said, you know, accountancy sounds okay. And then when I started the job, they said, what university are you going to register with? So I said, you got to study. They said, yeah, no, you got to study. So I said, yeah, okay, well, my matric wasn't good enough to get into Natal University, so I studied through UNISA. And I was an articled clerk, and then I was an accountant. I spent a good couple of years at a sugar manufacturing concern in a little town called Dalton, just between Pietermaritzburg and Greytown, so north of Pietermaritzburg. And then my wife was a Joburg lady, and we decided to be moving up to Joburg. And I went and found a job with the old LifeGro, which was the legal in general, was in South Africa. Then in apartheid years, they disinvested and they became legal in general, Volksgas. Volksgas bought them. And then they listed it under a new name called LifeGro. But then they got into huge trouble with some policies that they sold. And Volksgas also owned Momentum, which was a very small firm at the time. And Momentum actually bought the old LifeGrow. Then I started working at Momentum as a management accountant. And then a very good friend of mine in the company worked in the investments division. And I went and joined them. And then they had the whole Greg Blank scandal. And one of their portfolio managers was involved in that scandal and he left. And this friend of mine who was in the admin side of investments asked me to come and help them work on admin issues and that, because they had quite a bit of, you know, work to do with this one person leaving. And I started there working on the admin side. And then a terribly unfortunate, very tragic occurrence happened. The person that they got as a replacement for the portfolio manager who left actually committed suicide in the building.
Sure.
And then when that happened, Peter de Toy, who was the head of investments at Momentum, asked me if I wouldn't sort of like just stand in and help with portfolio management. And that's how I ended up in portfolio management.
That's almost an unbelievable story. So when you were thrown into the deep end to manage portfolios, that must have been quite daunting because you're managing people's savings and you've got a big responsibility. So when did you realize you were pretty good at it?
Well, I don't know whether I'm pretty good at it or not. I suppose the jury's still out on that.
No, I don't
but
think
I loved
so.
It. And, you know, there was the whole backup. You know, Peter de Toy was there. There were plenty of other portfolio managers to guide you guys with lots of experience. So, you know, I learned, and you still learn every day in investments. You know, that never changes. So, you know, I learned and I took advice and I started analyzing companies and going to company presentations and all of that. And then, of course, Rand Merchant Bank bought Momentum. So even the year I spent at Sage, Momentum ended up buying Sage. So I've been working for the same bigger group of companies since 1988.
That is a long time. And as you say, there were so many corporate transactions, but you followed a thread that led to Momentum and then through First Rand back to Momentum. It's been in quite a journey. Just over the years, has the portfolio management or the asset management industry or the principles thereof changed? Because when you started, there wasn't even live pricing. There wasn't transparency of information through a stock exchange news service like SENS. And, you know, obviously the world today is a lot different. But did that impact the principles of investing?
Well, look, the principles are always exactly the same. That doesn't change. That hasn't changed in forever, essentially. The principles of investment, as far as I can make out, you must always have a well-diversified portfolio, because everyone in investments thinks they must find the next winning thing. They've got to find the next winner. That's not the key to investments, actually. The key to investment is avoiding disasters. And the only way you can do that is with a diversified portfolio. So that's your first principle. The second principle, which a very, very well-known asset manager told me early on in my career, was that you must just apply common sense. When you look at something and it doesn't look lekker, just not right. You know, you must just think about things logically. I mean, in investments, this is not a science at all. I mean, there's been thousands of books written about investments and computer programs and many different philosophies. But essentially, what you're trying to do is guess the future. And that is inherently difficult. I mean, it's impossible. That's what you're doing. But what has changed is the items that you mentioned. When I started, you used to get the newspaper every morning to look at the price of the shares. You used to have to like almost carry this knowledge in your head. And then we had an external guy who used to come and see us, and he kept manual graphs of share prices. That was his job. And he used to every month come and give you an update, all written out manually on physical graph paper and then photocopied so you could see the history of a share price. What's it done over the last, I think he kept records for about 10 years or something. So you started off with a big folder on your desk with share prices manually put on a graph, and then you saw it. And of course, SENS didn't exist. So there you relied extensively on the brokers, because the brokers would go and visit management and they'll come and give you information. And then you'd go to the actual company presentation and ask questions. And obviously nowadays you got SENS and you don't even go to company presentations anymore because it's all online and you can download the presentation from their website. So it is, in some respects, a lot easier to get information. But sometimes the other thing I've learned in investments is that, you know, you can't see the forest because you're surrounded by all these trees. You know, there's sometimes too much information.
AI, are you concerned about AI changing the way the investment industry works?
It's quite possible. Everything has an influence on life, and obviously AI is a very big component of the future, but it can still only analyze past data and try and predict future events, which is essentially what we try and do all the time, is analyze past data and try and predict future events. So it might make it more efficient, it might help you, but nothing can predict the future, not a machine, not a human, nothing. And the other thing I've learned about investments is a huge component of being an investment manager is actually, let's call it client management or client liaison. People want to speak to a person who's managing their money, not a machine, not an index. Indices have been around forever, but they haven't taken over. People essentially are human, obviously, and they like the human touch. They like, if there's a problem, they like to phone someone or read someone's newsletter or read someone's comments on Twitter or all the other social media. So a lot of a portfolio manager's job is actually client liaison, and AI can't do that. So AI will never replace human needs, human instincts. And essentially, maybe even the majority of my job in the last 10, 12, 15 years has actually been client liaison, talking to people, presenting to people, going to see people. I can remember my daughter when she was still quite young at school. She must have been, I don't know, 8, 10, somewhere around there. At school, they had to give a little presentation of what their parents do. So mom was easy because she was a school teacher at their school. So she didn't have to explain what mom did. But then she came and asked me, Dad, what do you do? What's your job? I've got to give a little talk at school on this. So I explained to her the nuances and intricacies of my job. And then she looked at me and she said, you go to lunch and talk to people. A lot of it is talking to people, talking to clients, trying to help them understand a little bit about investments, trying to help them manage their money better, I suppose.
Just lastly, you have retired now. Did you find a huisie by die see? Where are you retiring?
I'm retiring exactly here in Joburg. I couldn't think of anything worse than going to find a place at the sea or a place at the river or a place at the game reserve. And then you wake up in the morning and you say, what am I going to do now? Must I walk on the beach? Must I go fishing? You know, my biggest fear, and I don't have to worry about this, but my biggest fear is you wake up in the morning and you say, darling, what are we doing today? You know, so I'm kept busy 8-10 hours a day, probably 12 hours a weekend working on cars because I really enjoy it. It's a really all-encompassing hobby of mine. So I don't foresee me waking up in the morning and saying, I don't know what I'm going to do today.
Where in Joburg do you live?
I live in Strathaven, which is in Sandton, but I've got a workshop in Kaya Sands, so I come through to Kaya Sands every day.
Phenomenal story. Wayne, thank you so much for your time, and good luck with your new career, I would imagine, as a mechanic working on exotic cars. And good luck with your retirement. May you always know what you're going to do when you wake up.
Yes, thank you very much, Rick, and thanks for giving me this opportunity.
Ons laat daar moet los. Wayne, bye-bye, dankie vir jou tyd vanaand. Dit was dan Wayne McCurry. Hy is een van Suid-Afrika se beleggingslegendes en hy het verlede week afgetree. Dit was dan my onderhoud met Wayne McCurry, oorspronklik uitgesaai op 7 November en ons het gesels oor sy loopbaan en sy liefde vir Jaguars. En daarmee het die tyd ons ingehaal en ons moet groet van Pieter Botha, Palesa Matlala en van my Ryk van die Kerk. Dankie vir die saamluister.
Jy het geluister na RSG Geldsaake met Moneyweb Potgoeie elke weeksdag om 7 na middag. Vir meer Moneyweb Potgoeie, besoek moneyweb.co.za of laai die toepassing af en volg Moneyweb News om dagliks op hoogte te bly.